Students often talk about the honor code as being very important, and the honor code was in force when you were a student. I wonder how it worked.
Well, it worked well, partly because most of us made sure that we didn't look around to see anything that we would have to report. I think we would have reported because we were so small in number. Don't forget that my class graduated 65 people. You took in maybe 100 people when you started. So it was sufficiently small that everybody knew everybody very well. And I think we treasured the fact that we were trusted and that there was that kind of an honor code. I don't think it was as pervasive socially as it was academically. There were a couple of instances where people were reported and were found guilty and were dismissed, but they were very rare. It worked well. And there, too, there was no student unrest. You accepted whatever was in force. It is a different world today. And I remember when a president at Swarthmore died in office during a student sit-in in his office, and I think it was the student unrest that might have caused his death. And I remember when Jack Coleman was president during that period, and everybody stood up once when he entered the room, and he said, "Don't ever do that. I won't know whether you're getting ready to leave or whether you're standing up in appreciation." Times had changed. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, the caliber of the president of a college as small as Haverford makes all the difference.
Yeah, you mentioned that that President Comfort was inflexible, but he was president for 20 years. And
I think it was more than 20.
Even 20 years. And did you have much... Did you have occasion to get to know him well during your student years?
I don't know that anybody got to know him intimately. Mm-hmm. I don't think he thought that anything worth reading had been written since the 17th century, but he was an intellectual. He was a good administrator, and he had time to take a nap every afternoon. No, I didn't get to know him as well as I would know someone like the Dean, Tat Brown, mm-hmm. who was the informal individual with whom everybody could relate and chat. But you did get to know every professor, mm-hmm. and you visited with them and they with you. I believe there's an effort to continue that always, but I don't know that it can be to the same extent. It was too small a place. It is much better to be the present size. I'm not concerned at the present size. I'm delighted that it can't possibly get to be a giant because physically mm-hmm. we don't have the space, much less the inclination. Mm-hmm. I happen to be thinking that as I moved along, the Alumni Association, I became an alumni representative to the Board of Managers, mm-hmm. and how there too the change is tremendous between Jonathan Rhodes, who was a brilliant giant, the very symbol of the Society of Friends, but he conducted the board meetings so that board members really didn't have to participate. Mm-hmm. There was great hesitancy on the part of most to become involved. On the other hand, when John Whitehead succeeded and became the chairman of the board, there was a totally different flavor. And I think it's due to the change in times where everybody's involved and everybody says everything. And it's, I think, again, without doing an injustice to Jonathan, who was absolutely terrific, that the climate of today is absolutely an improvement. Incidentally, the Haverford family, the Haverford board, is a place where never ever did anyone say a rude word, lose his temper, become aggravated. I have never attended meetings that were as civilized as the meetings at Haverford. And I've gone to a lot of meetings, and we get excited, and sometimes we yell a little bit, and sometimes we say things that are very unpleasant, not at Haverford. Mm-hmm. So I do think that the terribly difficult process of achieving consensus is a very civilized way of conducting business. But again, it can only be done in a small, I think it can only be done in a small frame. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it doesn't happen at Temple University and Penn, but it can and does exist at Haverford.
I noticed when you were a member of the board, of course, you remember from 1970 on, really. And there were a number of major issues that the board had to face, and I wonder if I could ask
you.
The biggest
issue was the issue of whether and when to go co-ed. And Jack Coleman absolutely became untenable. Because he felt that the time had come when you had to adopt co-education as a social matter, as a necessity from a financial standpoint, but it was the decent, right thing to do. And the board, including myself, decided it wasn't the right time, because the most significant thing that has happened to Haverford in the years that I've known it has been the relationship with Bryn Mawr. I do not believe, I'm jumping for a minute, I do not believe that Haverford nor Bryn Mawr could properly exist without cooperating. Haverford couldn't have the number of courses, the volume of faculty, the library, everything benefits from the cooperation. I think the same thing is true of Bryn Mawr. I believe that it would have disrupted the relationship too much at the time that Jack Coleman was president and wanted to adopt co-education. And we felt we could not do it then, and we would do it someday. And I think that's what caused Jack to resign at the time he did, but regardless of that, it made it easy for Robert Stevens. Because when he came in as president, it was the right time to talk about it further, and we did go co-ed, and that has been, I think the relationship with Bryn Mawr is the most significant, but I think co-education is a necessity.
Well, how did the co-education in 1979, how did that affect the relationship with Bryn Mawr from the point of view of the board?
It certainly didn't trouble the Haverford board. It certainly troubled the Bryn Mawr board, but by talking about it for some years, by pointing out how we hoped to do it and how we wouldn't let it interfere with our cooperation, and how we would very carefully monitor our admissions process, I think it all helped. And Bryn Mawr discovered within a couple of years that it didn't hurt them. Now, as I think about it, life isn't perfect, and our joint community is not perfect. There are too many women in the combined joint community, but I claim that one day Bryn Mawr will go co-ed, and that'll solve that problem. What I wonder, and would love to live long enough to know, is whether the two colleges will ever merge. At the moment, I don't see it as even a remote possibility. And I see no reason for it to happen, because there are differences.
Was this ever considered or discussed by the board when you were on the board?
Not seriously. It was discussed as something that Haverford would not want, and I believe Bryn Mawr would not want it either. Well, that's certainly true as long as Bryn Mawr feels that a women's college is a necessary, desirable academic institution. And it certainly, from our standpoint, wouldn't be desirable, because we have a sense of community at Haverford that I do not believe exists at Bryn Mawr. And I think we have relationships between faculty and students that do not exist at Bryn Mawr. There are no decisions made at Haverford that are dictated. Everything is evolved between faculty and student and administration and staff and alumni. It just seems to me that we consult everybody before we do anything major. Incidentally, I find that difficult a lot of the time, and I wish that I could be a dictator sometimes, but in the long run, the Haverford system is the one that has worked so well.
The other thing that happened during that period was the pretty sizable expansion of the enrollment in the 1970s and 80s. And was the board, did the board discuss that?
Often.
Was there
often
pros and cons about
Surely.
Doing that?
In fact, there were people who argued that expanding costs too much because the endowment per student is adversely affected. And others would argue that you need the tuition income because we didn't have enough endowment. And they're the ones who prevailed. We took in, but we didn't do it all at once. We did it several times. By the way, I probably have had the longest tenure on the board because I came on first as an alumni representative, and then I was chosen as a corporate member of the board. And I don't think they had a limitation for a while. And due to a variety of circumstances, I was on longer than I think almost anybody. And then I went off, having reached the maximum permissible. And then I was fortunate in that after a year of absence, I was made an emeritus board member, mm-hmm. and that I appreciate. But we didn't enlarge to this point all at once. Mm-hmm. And I think that it was done sufficiently slowly so that no one has been terribly upset by it. Mm-hmm. I think the size is good just the way it is.